Okay, the next argued case is number 20-1903, Invent SBE against the International Trade Commission. Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, may it please the court. I'd like to begin with the 590 patent before turning to our beloved 439 patent. The 590 patent requires encoding such that the upper digit is assigned more digits, or larger number of bits, than the lower digit. Nobody says or argues that the plain meaning of assign ordinarily connotes exclusive assignment through separate encoding mathematics or mathematically sequestered calculations. The fact that the commission has to add so many words to the word assign, requiring the upper digit, and I'm quoting from their brief, to be reflected in, quote, bits that are separate and distinct from the code word bits associated with the lower digit, which is achieved through separate encoding mathematics, shows that the commission is importing limitations from its particular embodiment in the specification without any words, express words of exclusion or disclaimer. And we know that the IDE did exactly that, because if you looked at page 59 of the appendix, The ID says specifically, what embodiment 6 discloses in terms of encoding technique is highly relevant, if not dispositive. Skilled artisans would know that an assign does not inherently connote exclusive and unique assignment or separate encoding mathematics, because we can assign more than one student to a class,
What if any evidence is there, and I just don't remember what's in your brief, for how artisans in the field would use the term assign as opposed to people thinking of school-based analogies?
Yeah. So on page 10560 to 10561, our expert explains that folks would understand that when you put in a 1 and you have that digit reflected, that's assigned. And when you end up with a 0 so that it's zeroed out, that can't be reflected, that would not be assignment. In addition, people, in fact...
Well, that's just the expert mapping the claim language onto the accused.
It is.
But we're trying to figure out, let's put that away for now and just try to figure out what is assigned.
Right. And Reed-Muller encoding, which my opponents say existed from the 1950s, that would assign multiple digits to multiple bits because it had ones and zeros in multiple columns. It would do multiple assignments in that respect.
It was a matrix multiplication,
and you apply the modulo 2, and you can end up with that exact same thing. This is well known in the art that you can do these things.
But I guess when I read this patent, at least, I can understand one particular conception of what it means to have a coder encode information by assigning to the upper digit a larger number of bits. And that's by having the upper digit be described by a code word that has a larger number of bits than the other digits' respective bit-sized code words.
That is, in fact, a simple example that it gives. And then it talks about combining them so that you have a 10-digit code word where the first part reflects the upper digit and the last part, the last four bits.
And so, therefore, you are encoding your digits on a digit-by-digit basis with each having their own code words.
Yeah, in that instance, that one embodiment, but we don't ordinarily take a single embodiment and read its specifics onto the claim and limit the claim, where the term used, assign, is more expansive in general usage. And here we all agreed on plain and ordinary meaning, the ID selected plain and ordinary meaning. And assign is more expansive than that.
But we can't construe it in such a way that it just becomes something very vague. I mean, I was concerned a little bit about your proposed construction, which is assigned means corresponds. I mean, to me, to accept that kind of construction just moves us further away from understanding how to figure out what the claim really means. And the same thing with the alternative in your brief about, well, we're just looking for a digit that will affect a larger number of bits. And that also made me wonder if that's really the right way to understand is assigned.
Well, certainly I think those are the way we'd understand assigned in its ordinary meaning. Because you would say when the digit affects the bit, that's assigned, there's a correspondence between the two. and the specification, and this is at appendix, 285, lines 63 to 65, uses the word correspond. And
even the ITC, context of the spec, though, its usage of correspond really is talking about this very specific allocation of X number of bits to digit one and then X minus Y digits bits to digit two.
Yeah, it's talking about in the context of that embodiment, but that is the one place where you have a synonym for assign. But the commission itself on page 37 of its brief says the bits assigned, where, quote, its value depends on the value of the CQI digit. And one thing we know is if you're zeroed out, if you're multiplied by zero, your value doesn't depend. The bit's value does not depend on the CQI digit. That's been zeroed out. It will have zero impact.
You went too fast for me. Something getting zeroed out and then something,
sure.
Something.
So the commission on page 37 of its brief says that a bit is assigned where its value depends on the value of the CQI digit. Now, when you took a look at the matrix and you take the CQI digit and you zero it out, you multiply it by zero, that bit, the resulting bit, will not depend on the value of the CQI digit. The CQI digit could be a billion, could be 0.1, could be 1, could be 0. The resulting bit is still going to be a zero. And that is because when you multiply anything by zero, it's zero. And no one would think that if the outcome bit has no dependence, no relationship, no anything to the digit, that that would be assigned. And so
let me just tell you what's in my mind. I don't understand there to be any reasonable dispute about what you just said about the effect of these things, and including no dispute about how if you use this kind of what some of you call blended bits in the range of the function, that, as I think you pointed out in your gray brief, and as it's 77 to 86 or something of the ALJ's decision, of the joint appendix, the ALJ's decision, that if you use this method, the fundamental purpose of the encoding method here is served. Namely, the upper digit is more protected against error than the lower digit. I think, as I'm seeing this, there's only one question, whether one takes embodiment 6 as the scope of this language, and that depends very much on a sense of how strong, as an ordinary language matter, this word assign is in the context as encompassing more than concatenation of code words into a single code word.
Right. And I think that assign ordinarily can include implementations where you do assign it uniquely or you assign it jointly, as all of our examples are. But even if you were to say assign means exclusively and uniquely assigned, that you can only have one CQI digit per bit, if you take a look at page 15 of our reply brief, that's table 14, it's talking about the 3G matrix.
Right, you look at the 3G only argument, which is a separate point, which looks very much like what's the one with the
diagonal block coding?
Southeast, what?
The diagonal block coding?
Yes.
Yes, it looks very much like that. In fact, it also looks very much like embodiment 6 in a sense, because the whole top of it, the first 15 rows, those reflect what you refer to as the blending. Different upper digit and lower digit could have ones or zeros. But when you get to the last 5 rows, those last 5 rows reflect the upper digit only 5 times. That's the upper digit 5 times. It's hard to say that you don't have the upper digit assigned or you have the lower digit assigned, where the result is 5 times the upper digit repeated. And so in this scenario, we have the same digit repeated 5 times, the upper digit. So you have 5 more assignments to the upper digit by any other.
So let me understand that, at least with respect to this 3G, it's going to generate a 20-bit code word.
Yes.
Right? And the first 15 bits, whatever value you see there, it's going to be a blending of all the digits. For the last 5, I can look at the last 5 bits of that code word and know that it's only talking about the upper digit.
5 times, exactly. It's the upper digit 5 times. Everything else is zeroed out, it's multiplied by 0, so it can have no effect. The only thing that goes into those last 5 bits is the upper digit. Upper digit, upper digit, upper digit, upper digit. So you'll have more, the upper digit assigned more bits, at least 5 more bits than the lower digit every single time. If that doesn't fall within assigned a greater number of bits, I'm not sure what would. And it looks a lot like embodiment 6 because you've just taken one top of the code word matrix and said, hey, the top of the code word matrix, that's blended. Bottom five rows of the code word matrix, that's uniquely and exclusively assigned to the other digit.
Well, it's different from six in that the top rows are not uniquely devoted to anything.
But I think that that's, in that way, the commission's construction is actually on the edge of absurd. Because in the commission's view, you could have 19 out of the 20 uniquely assigned to the upper digit. So every single one of those rows except one is uniquely assigned to the upper digit. But one of them is blended. In the commission's view, would say, ah, because you've got one blended bit, one bit flexible, that doesn't have more digits, more bits assigned to the upper digit. And that's absurd. Any speaker of the English language or any skilled artisan looking at this and saying, wow, 19 of 20 reflect the upper digit. It is the upper digit repeated 19 times out of 20. Would know that the upper digit has been assigned more bits than the one.
I'm sorry. I understood everything you said, but I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh, I'm just doing a hypothetical example in the commission's view.
You're doing a hypothetical.
In the commission's view, if you had 19 out
of
20 uniquely assigned,
that wasn't an actual accused embodiment or something.
No, I can't translate page. But in their view, if this upper part of the scale were one line, and the lower part, the last five, were 19.
Hypothetical that's more extreme than what's
exactly. And it kind of makes it clear that it's absurd because I don't think any skilled artisan would look at that and say, oh, that's you don't have more digits, more bits assigned to the upper digit in that context where 19 of 20 are just repetitions of the upper digit. If I could turn quickly to the 439, so as to not leave that on the table, unless there are further questions. I think the commission erred in construing two terms. The first is the data obtaining section that demodulates and decodes using identified parameters. And the second is construing per subband group basis to require multiple different subbands and different parameters for each. Beginning with the first, the claim recites a data obtaining section that demodulates and decodes using the modulation parameters decided at the parameter deciding section. When an apparatus claim speaks of performing a function, that simply requires the device to be able to perform the function, if called upon to do it, to be able to do so without modification. It doesn't require that it be performing that function at any particular moment or time. And that flows from Silicon Graphics. In Silicon Graphics, the claim referred to a rasterizing circuit that rasterizes, rasterization circuit.
Before we get into capability of, there were two infringement theories or the two non-infringement theories. One relates to the standard per se, and then the other one to the accused products. Am I right about that?
I think that my understanding is that they all related to the standard, that the accused products, when practicing the standard, either do or don't practice the claims.
Okay, because there's a non-infringement theory about how the accused products do not do all of these processings on a per subband group basis.
Ah, I see. And that's
right.
Yeah, but the argument is in order to satisfy the standard, they have to be able to. And they actually, in fact, do everything on a per subband group basis. I think if you're referring to about page 61 and 62 of intervener's brief, mm-hmm. that's the argument where the numbers don't line up. But that all relies on evidence that was excluded that the ALJ refused to consider at their behest. And so I don't think you can invoke excluded evidence and say, well, that proves my case when you are the one who got it excluded. But even so, that's a proffer. And our expert was prepared to, it's our proffer actually, our expert was prepared to say, look, a skilled artisan looking at those return results would look at those and say that those are meet the claims, if I'm understanding what part you're referring to.
Did you put on any evidence that if you practice the standard, at some point you will be performing these exact steps recited in the claim in the sense that, yes, the accused phones will be receiving data that was modulated and coded by the very parameters that the phone itself had selected earlier.
So in terms of how often that would occur, I don't think there's evidence that says it will occur this number of times. But our expert testified, and this was page 10881, that
what page?
10881. And then again at 10878 and 1820, these are all slightly different language, but it typically would do that. That typically the base station would select the same parameters that were chosen by the device because that's what optimizes the results.
I thought your expert had said if the data came in modulated by the very
by the same parameters that the phone had itself selected earlier, would it be able to receive that kind of data, and would it be able to demodulate that kind of data using those parameters? And the answer to that question was yes. But that's much more of a hypothetical of whether, assume for the moment that it in fact does receive that kind of data.
Yes. And I think that was opposing counsel's expert, and that was a cross-examination. He said, well, if they do receive it, yes, they can use it. And then he adds, I don't know how often that happens. That's right. The opposing counsel's expert. Our expert said that typically it would do so because it optimizes, and that's 10881 at lines 18 to 25. They would tend to, and that's 10878. And that's because the reason you're sending up those CQI information is that is going to tell the base station what works best, what I can do in terms of throughput best. But even apart from that, I think the key point that I would like to make is when you're talking about something that has a capacity, you say there's a structure that, and use a present tense verb, that simply means it's capable of. In Silicon Graphics, it was a circuit, a rasterization circuit that rasterizes. That doesn't mean it ever has to be rasterizing. It just has to be capable of rasterizing without modification, without change, when called upon to do so.
The concern I have here with your reliance on capability of case law is that even assuming for the moment that this claim that we're looking at is a capability claim, those cases are contemplating that once you activate those products, that they will, in fact, operate in a mode that performs the actual recited steps in the claim, the functionalities that are associated with the claimed apparatus. And here, I'm not so convinced that that is, in fact, when it happens, that that once you turn on these phones and they operate under this standard, it just snaps into a mode that, in fact, it is receiving this kind of data that is modulated based on the very parameters that the user phone had itself selected.
Well, Judge Shen, the ID, the commission never finds that this will never happen. The commission actually, the finding is, even if a base station happens to consider the CQI report of the UA, it does not appear likely, much less required, for the base station to choose the very parameters initially decided. So it's not likely it's going to happen on any individual basis. But it's critically important that if and when that happens, that the user device be able to demodulate on that basis. Because you can't have the user device send up a CQI signal and say, here are the ideal parameters, modulation and coding. Have the base station choose the same ones, and then have the phone say, sorry, I actually can't use those, signal dropped, call terminated. That's not a good phone. To be able to meet the standard and function, it has to be able to utilize the same parameters if they're sent back. I see that I'm well out of time. If I may reserve
can I just suggest something? And I don't know if it's maybe it's just me. There's some worry, at least in my mind, along the following lines. The language, the for performing language that is characteristic of capability claims, talks of, we've interpreted to mean basically you turn it on, it does this. You have language here that seems more definitive about what must be done. That is, it uses present tense language. And yet, you want to interpret that to mean something that requires very much less actual performance along those lines than even the capability standard does. Namely, it can, may virtually never. There seems something perhaps upside down about that.
So, Judge Toronto,
why is that the wrong way to look at it?
So I think if it happens rarely, that at most might go to something like damages, because something that doesn't happen very often, people would argue, isn't terribly important, it isn't very valuable. But in fact, here we know that it's actually incredibly valuable, because you have to be able to do that. In those events, if the base station selects those parameters, you're going to have to be able to demodulate and decode according to those parameters. Otherwise, like I said, you have the phone that says, oops, sorry, I can't do what I'm supposed to do, no call. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hader.
Hello, Your Honors. May it please the court. If I can, I'd like to stay with the 439 for the moment, please. Here, Your Honors, IMBT failed to demonstrate any infringement with respect to Claim 1, and in particular, limitations 1D and 1E. And I'd like to explain to you just why that is. Now, IMBT relied on the LTE standard, as we were just discussing, but that standard does not require that the parameters associated with the CQI index reported up from the mobile device must be the very same parameters eventually used by the base station in future communications. And in fact, IMBT failed to demonstrate even a single instance where that would ever happen under the standard.
The two responses to that would be, number one, Mr. Lampkin was analogizing to Silicon Graphics, widget that rasterizes, and yes, that looks similar to some of the claim limitations here. A parameter deciding section that decides. And then the second is his point that his expert said, usually, typically, it makes sense for the receiver to receive data that's modulated by using the same parameters that the user device had in fact selected. So they have testimony apparently that says that it can and does happen. And secondly, they say there's no requirement in the claim that it must happen every single time.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for that. What I'll do is address the second point first about their evidence. This is alluded to on page 60 of their opening brief when they say that both experts agreed that the accused products, being LTE compliant, must be able to receive and obtain data under the parameters originally decided upon by the mobile device. But again, that doesn't say anything about whether that actually happens, whether the very same parameters reported by the reported in the CQI report by the mobile are eventually the same ones decided upon ultimately by the base station. But if you turn back to page 40 of their opening brief, Your Honors, that's when IMBT alludes to some of this evidence that he was discussing earlier. Now, those assertions are such as that the accused products, quote, often will use the same parameters decided by the mobile. But those assertions are wholly unsupported by the evidence. If we turn to page 40, there are two portions.
Forget about their brief. So Mr. Lampkin specifically cited page 881 of the transcript, in which he said, and at least on quick reading, with some support on that page, that their expert said, typically that's what will happen. And we're putting aside here whether it's relevant or not that that's what will happen. Doesn't he say typically it will happen?
Well, yes, sir, he says typically. But that doesn't mean that it ever will. And he has very similar types of...
Well, I'm sorry, I don't get that.
Well, the reason why
If I say something typically happens, aren't I saying more often than not even that it in fact happens?
Oh, well, I think what we should do is look at the underlying document that he was referring to when he was testifying.
Okay.
He was looking at Appendix 1333, and that's some of the technical specifications of the LTE standard, Your Honor. I'll pull that up now. And so the third sentence down says schedulers. This is within the base station.
I'm sorry. What page am I supposed to be looking at?
1333, appendix 1333.
1333,
Your Honor.
My apologies. One too many digits. Sorry. Got it.
And so what he's testifying about, the basis for that testimony is the speculation that the expert has that they typically do. It's based on this line, Your Honor. Schedulers within the base station may assign resources taking account.
I'm sorry, what page? Where on what page am I you're reading from?
Same page, 01333, Your Honor.
Where on that page?
It's the third paragraph under 11.1, base scheduler operation. It begins, schedulers may assign resources.
Okay.
So it reads, schedulers may assign resources taking account the radio conditions at the UE, which is the mobile device, identified through measurements made at the ENB, which is the base station, and or reported by the UE, which is the mobile device. And so, in essence, what this is saying is that the base station may take into account the parameters reported within the CQI report that it receives from the mobile, Your Honors. So this does not say that the base station must base its ultimate decision as the parameters on that information within the CQI report. It doesn't say that it ever will or that it typically will. It just says that among the various things that the base station can consider, the various values and measurements and estimations that it can consider, is the parameters reflected in the CQI report. So,
can you address the question of whether it matters what actually happens in the use of these devices as opposed to simply what they are able to do?
Is this as far as what Silicon Graphics? Is that what you're referring to, Your Honor?
That would be part of it.
Sure, but just one point I'd like to make, though. I think the Geese Council mentioned how the IED, the ALJ's initial determination, never made a finding on this. That's actually incorrect. At Appendix 123, she found that IMVT failed to present evidence that the parameters corresponding to the CQI index are the very same parameters the base station ultimately decides upon. But so what we have here, Your Honor, is just it's a failure of proof. A complete failure of proof by IMVT to ever show that a base station would ever, in any instance, either in the past or in the future, even randomly, use the very same parameters reported by the CQI. And this is, again, what IMVT's counsel alluded to earlier when he was talking about an offer of proof. And this, we believe, illustrates that they knew of the shortcomings in their infringement proof because it happened on the last day of trial. They submitted an offer of proof with additional information on infringement. Again, that offer of proof was not accepted into evidence, and IMVT never argues on appeal that was an abuse of discretion.
Were you planning to talk about the 590, or are you leaving that to your colleague, or what?
If I had time, I was going to address it. If not, I'll leave it to my colleague, Your Honor. But as far as Silicon Graphics, Your Honor, I don't think it's applicable here, again, for the same reasons that IMVT has not shown that performing the standard could ever result in infringement. So that undermines its theory that the mere capability of performing the LTE standard is sufficient to show infringement here. In addition,
just so I understand your position, that position sounds to me like even if Silicon Graphics, this is a capability of claim, they have never actually put on the proof to show that the standard as practiced by phones is reasonably capable of actually doing all these steps that are recited in the claim.
That's precisely our position.
Okay.
Even if. And again, with respect to Silicon Graphics, here, unlike in Silicon Graphics, it's clear from the evidence that the accused products are just not designed in accordance with the claim language. For example, the evidence shows that the LTE-compliant accused products are not designed to use the parameters that itself decided upon as reflected in the CQI report that is transmitted to the base station. Rather, they're designed to use the parameters specified by the base station as required by LTE, and that's within the DCI message that is sent. So I have 1 minute, Your Honor. I think I will say just a couple of things about the 590 patent, Your Honors, unless you have any more questions about the 439.
Okay. No, it's all right. Let's hear from Mr. McMahon.
Can I use my last minute for the 590 patent, please? I think I have a little bit more time.
It's going up.
Oh, it's going up?
Actually.
Okay. Can I have 15 seconds then? Or no? Okay.
It's all right. We'll hear from your colleague.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. please the court. I do plan to focus mostly on the 439 patent, but if you will, I'll begin briefly with the 590 patent with 2 points. The first is, Your Honor, I think, Judge Toronto, you were exactly right about the word assign. It does come down to the word assign, and the commission did not improperly read in a limitation, read in embodiment 6. The commission focused on the word assign in the claim, looked to the spec as we should to understand the context for the claims, and saw that that was perfectly consistent with the notion of assign, meaning what we would expect it to mean, that you're assigning bits to specific digits.
What you just said is obviously true because it's self-evidently circular. Of course, assign means is consistent with the notion of assigning. The question is whether assigning in this line of work includes making it a effectual input into the resulting bits, which does not require segregation of the resulting bits according to what the inputs are, the digits that are input.
Yes.
Right? It's apparently utterly normal from, you know, including, was it the Reed-Muller coding, which goes back 60 years or something, that this is one way of assigning bits that you're trying to encode into resulting code words.
But the difference in answering that question, which way should you go, is that there is evidence in the record and in the patent supporting the notion of assigning, meaning the exclusive flavor of assigning. And there is no evidence to support, as Judge Shen said, the more much more broader and ambiguous suggestion that assign might not simply mean effective.
It is definitely broader, but why is it ambiguous? Any system in which digits affect a particular bit would count. How is that ambiguous?
There's no evidence to support that that is the suggestion of what was meant by the word assign. There are certainly more clear ways to recite that the bits are affected by, if that's what the patentee intended. They use the word assign, which is a more definite word.
So that actually has, what you're saying now has zero to do with ambiguity.
No, and I apologize. When I said
it's broad,
I didn't mean to suggest that the claims are ambiguous. I was suggesting that if you read the claims, if you read assign to mean affected by, as INVT suggests, picking up on what Judge Shen said, that's a very ambiguous, amorphous interpretation. The claims themselves are perfectly clear, especially when read in the terms of the specification, as the commission did, to suggest assigning to different code words. And to be clear, the commission did not limit the claims to embodiment 6. The commission specifically acknowledged that there was an argument that there's another embodiment, another way to do this beyond claim 6, diagonal block coding, which would be covered by the patents. Now, I do want to make a point about diagonal block coding, which is that, yes, that would result in a code word dedicated to the most significant digit and a code word dedicated to the least significant digit, and they can be concatenated to result in one combined code word. That is not what 3G does, as INVT suggests, because it's not true block coding. It has blended rates, and both LTE and 3G both use 20-bit code words that are driven by both the most significant and least significant bits. The other point I did want to make, just because nobody has mentioned it, is the question of mootness as to the 590 patent. As the commission notified the court in a letter several weeks ago, the 590 patent is set to expire in March, and as a practical matter, it seems unclear that if the court were to reverse and send this back to the commission for proceedings to reach a remedy, whether that could be accomplished before the 590 patent expires.
One practical question, not specifically about mootness. Do all or most of the devices that are sought to be excluded include both 3G and LTE? Or more importantly, I guess, do all of them include the 3G capability?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm prepared to address that.
The phones are not segregated by the LTE phones and the 3G phones, right?
Typically, LTE products are backwards compatible with 3G standards, but I can't speak to the entire record of products in this case.
No, I'm trying to gauge how much the other side would win if it wins on its it's 3G argument, 3G only argument for 5G.
Yeah, I do want to be clear. That's not, that is not diagonal block code. It might look a little bit similar.
Got that.
On the 439 patent.
Can we stay on the 5?
Certainly.
Blah, blah, blah.
590 patent.
590 patent. So the 3G model?
Yes.
Where the last five bits are clearly devoted, dedicated to the upper digit. Why is it wrong to say that therefore more bits are clearly assigned to the upper digit, because we've got five bits that are uniquely associated with the upper digit, unlike any other digit of the CQI in that case?
But those five digits do not stand alone. Those five digits are part of a 20-bit code, and those five digits by themselves don't tell you anything about the most significant bit. To understand what the most significant digit is, you still have to look to the entire 20 bits. So with respect to the commission's claim construction of mathematically segregated, they're not mathematically segregated. The 20-bit code word represents both of the digits, represents the entire CQI value altogether.
Well, I guess one way to put it, I think this is the same point. If we're just reading the plain language of this claim element and using the term assign to mean assign exclusively, then the question is the upper digit assigned a larger number of bits, that is assigned exclusively a larger number of bits than the lower digit? Answer for the lower digit, zero. Answer for the upper digit, five.
With respectfully, Your Honor, that's not true. It's the 20, it's a 20-bit code word. You can't isolate those five
bits. The claim language doesn't say you have to take account of all the bits in the code word.
Right, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I'm distinguishing what you said about the products. The products don't have five bits for the most significant digits. The products have 20 bits for the most significant digits. So
their 3G point is that this provision requires, even if you take assign to mean assign exclusively, no more than that there be a larger number of bits exclusively assigned to the upper digit, exclusively, that's five, than there are to the lower digit, that's zero.
So I maybe I'm not understanding the question, but there are not five bits that are the most significant digit is not represented by just five bits. It's represented by
so
all
what?
20.
Why does the claim doesn't say that it doesn't require anything about the totality of bits affected by the digit? In fact, now we've dropped the affected interpretation, and we're talking about assigned exclusively, which is your interpretation. And on that, and the 3G, there are five bits that are assigned exclusively to the upper digit and no bits assigned exclusively to the lower digit.
I do understand your question, Your Honor, and I think that's why the claim is speaking to how many bits are assigned to a particular digit. And in both 3G and LTE, 20 bits are assigned to...
So then assigned doesn't mean assigned exclusively, does it? If you're talking about the other 15 bits, the only way they're assigned is if assigned means non-exclusively.
I think that assigned by itself is perfectly clear. I don't think that it needs to be assigned exclusively, and I think that's consistent with what the commission said. Again, the commission's construction was mathematically segregated, looking at, you know, just as the patent teaches us, having two separate code words, one for each of the two digits that are then concatenated.
And so that is reducing the claim to just the embodiment?
Well, not necessarily, because there's the alternative of using diagonal block coding, which is not embodiment 6, but would result in the same code word and therefore meet the claim. I'm way over time, Your Honors, but can I make one point about the 439 patent?
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No,
I'd like to hear about the 439 patent. Just briefly.
So with respect to the assignment, I'm going to step past the question of capability. I agree with Your Honor, Judge Toronto, that the gerund form is the typical approach to capability. But stepping past that, because it is dispositive here, it is impossible. And I want to just clarify what the evidence shows here. It INBT would have this be an apples-to-apples comparison between DCI and CQI. They're not. It's apples and oranges. So the phone picks a CQI value and reports that to the base station.
Channel quality information.
Channel quality, yes, exactly. It's a very coarse estimate of the maximum throughput that the phone can receive on a given channel. Then the base station does something in the background, and none of us know what that is because INBT chose not to investigate the base station operation during discovery, but we do know what the standard says. And the standard says that the base station sends a DCI message back down to the phone.
And DCI stands for?
Download channel, download channel information. I think it's assigning, it is the assignment that tells the handset, this is what I need you to do to send information back to me. Okay. These are the resource blocks I have allocated to you. This is the modulation scheme that I need you to use. And this is an index, and this is the critical part, an MCS index that you can use according to tables that are set forth in the standard to identify what your bit rate should be on the way back up. There are many more possible DCI values, MCS.
Like 3,000 or something.
Yes, exactly. It's only 16 possibilities for CQI. There are thousands of possibilities of what the base station can assign. Why? Why don't they line up with CQI? Because LTE is a very complicated system that in which the base station has tremendous discretion in assigning bandwidth to a number of different handsets, and it has to balance that across a broad spectrum, and so there are thousands of possibilities. Now, do any of those possibilities match any of the 16 CQI possibilities that the phone could have identified? The answer is no. How do we know that? Because every expert who was asked the question said, I don't know, I'm not aware of an instance. At no point did INBT ever identify two that match. And when pushed against the corner and forced to finally try to come up with a theory that could match two different coding rates, they submitted an offer of proof. It was not admitted into record. But even then, the two numbers they presented did not match. So nobody has been able to identify a single instance where DCI matches CQI, and that is the basis for their infringement case. That is their basis for saying that it complies with the standard. The standard says, and the phone must do what the standard says, so the capability argument falls apart too, because in order to make the phone do something different, the phone would have to be modified.
Can I ask one question about the 439? How many independent arguments for affirmance on 439 do you have, and what are they?
There are three. So we've focused on the mismatch between CQI and DCI. That's the coding and modulation parameters. Second one we haven't even talked about is subband groups.
Per subband.
Right. And then the third one is the final limitation of the claim, which the commission also found was not satisfied because INBT relied solely on the standard.
Does the petitioner have two separate theories to get to infringement, one through the standard and one through the accused product?
They relied solely on the standard. The answer is no.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else?
I've had enough.
Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you. Thank you. Starting with the 590 again, there's nothing in the record to suggest that the term assigned in this field generally means uniquely and exclusively assigned. If you look at footnote 48, footnote 9 on page 49 of our brief, it really can't have that meaning. But even if one were to, I think, Judge Toronto, you're absolutely right that 3G standard with five final bits, which are uniquely assigned to the upper digit, they are the upper digit repeated five times. That would be uniquely and exclusively assigned. And that would mean that more bits are assigned to the upper digit. Five more bits. At least five more bits. But the same thing actually exists in 4G. I should point out that if you turn to the commission's brief on page 36,
is 4G LTE?
The LTE, yes. If you look at row 14 and row 19,
I'm sorry, would you brief what page?
The commission's brief on page 35. Look at the, in this instance, the most significant digit is on the far left, and you only have four bits. It's a four-bit system. Rows 14 and rows 19 are 1, 0, 0, 0. So row 14, the 14th bit, and 19, I'm sorry, row 14, which would be the 15th bit, and row 19, which would be the 20th bit, will exclusively represent the upper digit. They will not reflect the lower digit. It will be the upper digit repeated in row 14, so bit 15, and row 19, which is bit 15, or bit 20. I also wanted to turn really quickly to the commission's concession about diagonal.
I'm sorry, this is one in which A1 is the upper?
Yes, A1, yes, and also M10 right there, yes. That's your upper digit, the blue one, and everything else is a less significant digit. You have 1000 for row 14 and 1000 for row 19. So your 20th bit and your 15th bit. And if you wanted to flip the page, on the far right you have the same thing turned sideways. But if you
right,
the very last column, it's that one's all 1000 again.
Yeah, I'm lost on your point. Like the 19th bit on page 35.
Yes, there's only...
There's a 1, but and then...
And that 1 reflects the most significant digit.
Right, then there's a 000, but then there's a couple more 1s in that row.
Right, and there's only 4 digits, so you stop at the green one. There's nothing more after that. So you're the only ones that count to the first 4. So that's why you end up with 1000.
All the pink columns to the right of the green are not actually being used at
nope.
all in this encoding.
They cease to be important. You only use 4. It's because input is a 4-bit code, and the output is a 20-bit.
This is representing the LTE?
That's LTE. On page 64, we have our diagonal block code. And I think this is where the commission actually effectively concedes its case. The commission's view is that even
page 64
of the appendix, I'm sorry. The commission's view is that if you have a 0 in one of the columns, that results in assignment, and therefore you have everything assigned. Well, if that were true, every one of the bits here would be assigned to 10, or every one of the digits here would be assigned to 10 bits because you have a 10 by 10 matrix, or an 8 by 10 matrix. So that can't be right. When you have a 0 there, that precludes assignment, and you have things uniquely and exclusively assigned by not having the zeros. Finally, turning to the 439, there's two arguments that were raised. The first is that Appendix 126 says that there is no proof that this actually happens. But the proof, if you look at the ID's decision, the ID says, look, there's no evidence that it's likely or that it happens often. But that's not a finding that it would never happen. And even if it were that it's not likely that it would happen, what matters here is capability. If the phone needs to be able to demodulate and decode based on the parameters it sent, because those are taken into account, and as our expert explained, there's a reason it sends them. Those are going to be the best. If it can't, then the call is terminated and it doesn't work, and that's just not a very good phone call at all. And then finally, in terms of whether CQI and DCI are different animals, they are sent by different means. CQI is a matrix of 16, 15. One of them is a call out of range. The DCI, you have to figure out modulation encoding by looking across a bunch of tables. But in the end, what our expert would have said in that proffer, and isn't mentioned, is that, look, if you're going to look at that data, if you're going to look at it and say, gee, there's a not precise match, he would have said they're so close. They're so close that a skilled artisan would consider them to be one and the same. If there are no further questions... we ask that they...
mootness?
Sure. So we have one patent that will expire in March. In the event there aren't circumstances that keep it alive along the lines of what happened in ITC versus Comcast and... Excuse me, it would be Comcast versus ITC and Roe v., then we'll have to tell the court we need a Munsingware vacatur as opposed to the case being alive. But I think that's a ground that we cross when we get to it. Once we get to March and the patent expires. But it's also always possible, as was the case, I think, Judge Newman, it was your opinion for the court it was Comcast versus ITC and Roe v. Sometimes there are circumstances that will keep a case alive, notwithstanding the expiration.
Well, what is the specific expiration date?
I don't know the exact one, but it is in March of next year. So
okay.
we given that the commission took 21 months to get through this and that it used a total of 128 days to file its opening brief in this court, understandably, under the circumstances, I'll add, but given that amount of time, we would hope that the commission would act with alacrity in any remand. And I don't think that's an unreasonable hope.
So what happens if we don't issue an opinion for half a year?
Yeah, so if the patent expires in the interim and there's nothing else that keeps it alive, we'd probably be asking for, or keeps the dispute alive and not move, we'd probably ask for a Munsingware order, which is vacatur and remand, with a request to vacate the decision in light of mootness. And that's just a traditional thing that happens when cases go up on moot on appeal.
Including from the ITC, even though there's no preclusive effect in district court cases?
Yeah, the problem is that it can have other effects in the ITC, and the general rule is that even in agency proceedings, you have Munsingware orders because you have the risk of collateral effects. And if the court's been denied its ability to review the case by virtue of the passage of time, which might happen here, then you get a Munsingware order in order to clear the way for relitigation, whether at the ITC or in some other form. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under submission.